I'm Baron. I'm a very grateful real alcoholic. I'd like to thank Bill and the rest of the committee to have me over here. It's always a pleasure to speak. I am a firm believer that I cannot keep it unless I give it away. Just so you might be curious, my sobriety date is December 9th, 1981. And it started out like most drunks, in belligerent denial for the first year or two. I'd like to read something I always read when I'm speaking. It kind of helps me to get centered and allow me to get the butterflies to fly in formation. I am rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have been gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. Now I feel centered. And I feel great that there's a lot of people who raise their hands here. I'm amongst my people, if you will, you know. Like I said, when I first started out, I did a lot of crazy things when I was growing up. I'm from back east, back in Pennsylvania. I was born in Youngstown, Ohio. I lived all up and down the Ohio-Pennsylvania border from Erie to Pittsburgh. And I've been to two high schools twice, and one elementary school twice. That's how much we moved, you know. And I was very fortunate that I was given a fairly decent home. I was 9 years old when my mother died. I never knew my father. I was taken in by my grandmother, my granddad, my aunt, my uncle, and there were several other aunts and uncles in between there. And, you know, at 9 years old, I did little things like smoking corn silk and pipes and sneaking beer, you know. From then on, things just kind of progressed into getting worse. I was a bouncer in a bar in Youngstown, Ohio, actually Borden, Ohio. Just turned 16 and I was a bouncer. So I look pretty old for my age, you know. I probably still do. I don't know. I know that I'd look a lot worse if I kept on drinking, you know. We always do, you know. I gotta tell you, it amazes me that I'm even alive today for some of the things that I've done. I was almost court-ordered to leave my county, good old Mahoning County in Pennsylvania. And the reason for that was is because I was just doing a little bit of trading on auto parts and so forth. No big thing, you know. I'm kind of envious of one of my relatives who's a cousin, and she got her engineering degree. And the reason why I'm jealous is because I've always liked to tinker. I always used to make things, and I made a tow truck and set it up so that I could back that tow truck up to a vehicle and have the engine pulled probably within a half hour. It was just one of those things where somebody would see a tow truck going down the street with an engine dangling along behind him, you know. I did other things, you know. We did mostly Halloween pranks and stuff like that, you know, but it was not any big thing. When I did decide to try to get straight, it wasn't working too well. I was actually straight at the time. One of my teachers, a science teacher, accused me of being a thief, and by that he meant to say that I was cheating. And I don't know about anybody else in here, but you know, I guess it's just a matter of the way I was raised. You know, there's some sort of pride in that, you know, and I wasn't really doing anything. You know, I kept telling the kid in the test, man, you know, I don't want to do this stuff, you know. And then I got caught. And teacher sent me to the principal, and the principal wanted to, you know, they have those paddles, you know, with the holes drilled in them, you know. They're supposed to pick up more speed, you know. And he was willing to give me 3 whacks and let it go with that. And I vehemently denied the fact that I was a thief or a cheat. And I also told him that if he even laid that panel on me, he was going to go through his own window. And needless to say, he kicked out of school. School was about, I don't know, 10, 12 miles away. We'd go on the bus. I walked the entire way home. Walk up the driveway, and my uncle that I was living with at the time saw me. He jumped off the tractor and said, hey, what's happening? And I told him what was going on. I didn't tell him about the threats of the principal, though. He found that out later, and he said, well, he says, you know, you were almost right there, you know, all the way up until the time you threatened the principal. And so I was kicked out of school, and I never went to my graduation. I'm still in the yearbook. I still get calls for the high school reunions and so forth. Never been to one. I'd like to go just to see, you know, what people are like nowadays and how many drunks there are from my class. It might be interesting. Anyhow, I was kind of beholden into joining the Navy. Now, it wasn't so much that the Air Force wouldn't take me because I didn't have a high school diploma. The Marine Corps, I felt, you know, carrying rifles and sitting in foxholes was just as bad as the Army. If the Coast Guard recruiter was there, I probably would have went to the Coast Guard, but I went to the Deep Sea Navy and joined. And from there, I don't know if anybody, some of the folks that are a little bit older today, remember those old posters where you see the sailor kind of lollygagging onto a light post, you know, so they join the Navy and, you know, it's an adventure, you know? And for me, it was an adventure, you know? I went through the whole thing, and the really, really great part about it was a wonderful career. I'm retired today. Most of my, all of my mortgage and then some is being paid by my retirement. And funny things happen to you when you get sober, you know. Really great things happen. So, you know, if you're new to this program and you don't know exactly what's happening, it's okay. If you just keep coming back. Matter of fact, I told some of the girls who were up here tonight for their coin, just stay. Hang around some people that want to stay sober. That's what I did, you know. I made it through a lot of the ranks in the Navy, and continued to drink on the way, and I made the Navy's life so miserable they decided to do something about it. And they sent me to rehab. Now, I didn't go willingly, though. You know, I'm somewhat of a sea lawyer also, and the commanding officer that I had came up through the ranks the way I did, and he and I were stationed together in numerous places. And he knew me, and I knew him. And when I walked into his office, he had 2 folders, and, you know, the middle of folders, and sitting in front of him. And he said, You know, Chief, you and I have been together for a long time in this man's Navy, and I know a lot of things that you've done. And there's a lot of things that I'm sure that you're going to be able to do. But he said, you need to know something. You need to know that you're going to have to do something about your drinking. Now, at that particular time, I stopped doing other things, you know, outside issues, you know, marijuana and a few of the other things, you know, because they were starting the urine test and other kind of things, you know, and so I kind of laid off on that, and that, of course, increased my beer and whiskey intake. And as a net result of that, my captain told me, he says, I've got two things to tell you today. He said, first of all, I've enjoyed having you in my command, but you're starting to wear out your welcome. He said, I have two manila folders sitting in here in front of me. On this folder right here, I have your discharge papers already, and by Friday, you'll be out of the Navy. Now, mind you, I told you I was somewhat of a sea lawyer, and I didn't think it was going to take, I thought it was going to take a lot longer than that. However, I kind of thought, I've seen him do it. I've seen him do it with my own, some of the people, my own crew. So I knew he wasn't bluffing. And he said, on this other side of the folder, this manila folder here, I'm going to send you to rehab. He said, there's not going to be anything to show up in your service record. There won't be anything other than what's in there right now as far as anything medically wise. You're basically getting away with this scot-free, but I want you in rehab. And, man, I'll tell you, I was so tempted to pick that one on the left. I thought to myself, man, this gives me the opportunity to get out of this man's Navy and maybe try something else, you know. And then I got to thinking about it, and I said, well, you know, I've been making a pretty good ass out of myself for quite a long time, and maybe it's time I ought to settle down and see what's going on, you know, try to test the waters a little bit. So I went to rehab, and my second night in rehab, I went through DTs. They handcuffed me to my rack, and the guys that were in my class, in my rehab class, kind of kept an eye out on me for most of the night and a good part of the morning. As a matter of fact, when the corpsman walked in and took the handcuffs off, all the guys says, oh, I don't think you ought to do that, you know. And I was fairly straight in my mind at the time, and I said, you know, I'm okay. You know, I sweat rolling down off me. The bed that I was in, the mattress was soaked completely, you know. And I didn't think I had a drinking problem. I really didn't, you know. As a result of that, I went through the rehab with flying colors. You know, I memorized chapter 5. I memorized chapter 3. I did all the things that I was supposed to do, with one exception. I was sharing with a friend of mine a couple days ago that I got really angry and upset one day. We were in session, in group session, and it was a big old circle. And I had a coffee cup in my hand, and I got really upset at this one guy, and he was sitting across the room from me, and I took that coffee cup and I threw it, and it missed the top of his head probably about 3 or 4 inches. It might have been more than that, I don't know. But it smashed right up above his head. And of course, I'm out of the room, you know. And the counselors had a little talk with me, you know. And I'm not sure exactly what I said or how I explained it, but I was upset because I'm thinking to myself, these people are in here just playing silly-ass games, and I'm in here trying to learn something. Now, mind you, what I was trying to learn is how to drink successfully. That's what I was trying to learn. See? And never mind that I may have had a problem and booze was my problem. No, I didn't think so, but I figured, you know, I tried everything while I was drinking, you know, potatoes, soaked in butter, you know, raw eggs, you name it, you know. And the insanity of my disease was every time I went out and I started drinking, I could not stop until either I passed out, and if I got sick, it was because of the water. The water did it, Jane. So, you know, I've been kind of looking at the time here, and I was telling a friend of mine yesterday, as a matter of fact, last night, you know, I've got nearly 29 years of sobriety, and it's been the happiest time of my life. And I'd like to share with you some of the things that have happened to me in sobriety. We all know how to drink. A lot of us don't know how to stay sober. See? And let me preface one thing. You can spend an awful lot of time not drinking and not being happy. I have a program today. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to meetings, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6 times a week. I speak when I can. I just finished speaking down at Coalinga, and a lot of people were upset with me because, and it's just like tonight, there probably would have been a crowd of my home group and some other people that I know that would be here tonight, you know. But we kept it pretty quiet that I was going to be here. I'm glad. It's a nice, small, intimate group, you know. I spoke in front of, 30, 40, 50, 60, 300, even more than that. And every time I speak, I preface or I add the fact that since I now have nearly as much sobriety as I had when I was drinking, I think it's more of a credit to myself to let you know what sobriety is like and not what it's like. Because we know how to drink, folks. Don't we all know how to drink? You know? Can anybody remember the great white porcelain god O'Rourke? You know? Or how about being a Buick salesman, you know? Any one of those, you know? God, if you get me out of this one, I'll never do it again. I haven't had to say that in a long time. You know, when I first got sober, I got a sponsor, and the sponsor was from the rehab. He was a graduate from the rehab that I came from, and I listened to him speak at various times, and he was wet brain, but he was in the Navy, and he was doing what he could do, you know. And one of the reasons why I was impressed with him is because anybody that had a condition that he had and still remained sober, there was something in that man that I wanted. Okay? And there were a lot of people who were really upset with me because I had him as my sponsor. You know, I'd go to meetings and he'd be sitting on the steps of the meetings and I'd be walking up and he'd look at me and say, "Well, Bear, I see you haven't turned it over today." And I'm like, "What? What? Turn what?" You know? And he would get me into the first, second, and third steps. And, you know, if you're new today and you haven't done the steps, I'm almost willing to bet that if you can't get beyond the third step, you're not going to stay sober. That's just my opinion, and it's a humble opinion. You know, I've been around this program long enough to know. Now, I've also been around this program long enough to know that even if you do the third step, there's no guarantee. None whatsoever. Shucks, there's no guarantee that I'm not going to walk out tonight and find myself the nearest bar and drink. I won't have my bride with me either. There's no guarantees. The only guarantee that I have in my life today is that I have a very loving God that has lifted me from that scrap heap and lifted me to the point where I'm able to love my fellow man. You know, I don't know about anybody else, but there's a contrast here. The contrast is when I was drinking, I didn't like any of you, let alone love you, you know? There's probably a pretty good chance that I wouldn't drink with any of you, you know? But the fact of the matter is, and it's been a proven fact, that if I stuck with the program, stayed in service, worked the steps, and looked in the mirror and told myself I love myself, if I did that long enough, I'd learn how to love me. The consequence of that is I've learned how to love you. See? I'll never forget my third sponsor after the brain dead guy. No, he wasn't brain dead. He was just a wet brain. My sponsor that I got, my third one after that, you know, it's really funny that I should run into him. His sponsor was Dr. Bob. At the particular time when I asked him to be my sponsor, he had 52 years of sobriety. And let me tell you something, he knew some things. There's a lot of people that are sitting in this room that would not like him. Because he had so much sobriety, he'd sit there and he'd call you on your BS real quick, right there in front of everybody. He wouldn't flinch you. He'd just call you on your, you know, on what it was all about. He oftentimes told me stories about him and Dr. Bob and Bill W. and some of the many other ones that finally got into the Akron group and the Cleveland group and all that. And he used to go from one end of the state to the other and over to Pennsylvania and New York and all this good stuff. And he lived in Hawaii and started about 30 or 35 years of sobriety. He would keep a camper down in Los Angeles. And he would fly over to Los Angeles, pick up his camper, go up through the California groups, you know, and then head on east, and he'd go down to Florida, and he'd stop at AA people's places all the way, somebody. His name was Clancy Uterhart, not to be confused with Clancy I. And he went to the Pacific group, and he knew Clancy I. And there's a lot of people across the country who knew him. And to be quite honest with you, I'm so glad that God allowed me the opportunity to know that man. He died the day after I sat by his bed. And he turned to me and he says, the only really nice thing about this whole situation I'm in is I'm going to die sober. And that morning he died. He passed. Sobriety... is a kick in the butt. It really is. But I remember early in my program, probably within the first year, that there was a few people that told me this, and I probably heard it 15 times in meetings, and I never heard it until one day I turned to my sponsor, I turned to Clancy, and I said, hey, what about that? And he'd say, well, what about that? They say that in almost every meeting. And I'd say, really? You know, as the old saying goes, you don't hear until you hear. You don't see until you see. Some of the things I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is the fellowship of man. And I'm not talking about the fellowship of walking in here and thinking that you guys can find the nearest, most convenient skirt and find yourself a fellowship with her. See? Same goes with you girls, too. You know, that happens an awful lot. AA boy meets AA girl on the AA campus, you know. My lovely bride and I have known each other for probably 5 years before we even started dating. And then we dated for 2 years, well, 3 years, before we finally got married, you know. And again, that's the greatest thing God has afforded me, you know. We have a lovely home today. We have two cars that are paid for. I have a job that I've been doing. You know, I'm a meteorologist by profession. And I love coming up here. See the bar? The cashier, you know. I really like that, you know. But the really neat thing is this wheel back here, see? Because I'm a weather forecaster, that's what we use. And it works most of the time, too. No, I've been doing the weather gig for over 30 years. Well over 30 years. Almost, well, no. 40 years. And I'm not tired of it yet. Somebody's asked me when I'm going to retire, and I said, oh, about 5 years. And a very dear friend of ours was over at the house last month, I think it was, and she asked me, she says, well, when are you planning on retiring, Bear? And I said, yeah, probably in about 5 years. She says, you know, 5 years ago you said that. I said, well, I'm not ready to retire yet. What can I say, you know? I probably will at some point in time. We have the opportunity to travel. We're going to go on a cruise down to the Caribbean next year. This year, I think we're going to make a couple trips to Mexico. I'd like to get back to Pennsylvania and visit my sister. She's not even the same generation I'm in. She's 15 years older than I am. She even told me when her and I finally started to speak to each other a little over a year ago, that she was very jealous of me because she was the baby in the family until I arrived, you know. And we have different fathers. I know there's an awful lot of that going on. Between my bride and I, we have 7 children, 12 great-grandchildren, and 2 or 3 great-great-grandchildren, right? Something like that. Three. Okay. I don't know. I can't keep track of them. I got to tell you that the most that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is don't drink and go to meetings. See? If I have learned anything else, it's don't drink and go to meetings. See? I sponsor people, and sometimes a guy will walk up and be all frustrated and all that good stuff and nervous and all that, and I'll tell him to sit down and tell me all your blues, you know, and spill your guts. And he'd do all those things, and I'd sit there and look at him and say, don't drink and go to meetings. It's a simple program. I almost swore there. It's a simple program. It's a God-given, simple program, you know. We have our son-in-law is in CAP right now up in Fresno. Went up to visit him this last Sunday, and he seems to be doing pretty good, you know. He reminds me so much of me. He's just wants to run this and run that, you know. People aren't doing things the way they're supposed to be done, and, you know, and I really enjoy that. I enjoy talking to him because I thought to myself, man, if he wasn't my son-in-law, he must be somewhere along the line. Somebody got into the woodpile because he thinks exactly the way I do. Exactly. You know, I look at this thing every day and think to myself, you know, I have had the greatest opportunity given to me. You know, it's kind of like going around in the merry-go-round, you know, and you know, they got that deal. I don't know if they still do it or not. They got that deal with the brass ring. You know, you get the teddy bear if you're the Koopy doll if you get the brass ring, you know. Well, I've been swinging around there, and I've been grabbing that brass ring, see. And as I grab that brass ring, what I get out of it, what I learn from it is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And it can happen to you. It can happen to anybody. How could it happen? Well, the first thing we need to do is keep the plug in the jug. The second thing we need to do is maybe go to meetings. The third thing we maybe need to do is work the steps. My lovely wife and I have worked the steps long enough and hard enough where the steps work us. Sometimes her and I are so close on thinking the same thing. And we'll say something, and you have the old saying, bread and butter, you know. Wow, man, I was just thinking of that too, you know. Ain't it great? One other thing, am I okay time-wise, Bill? I'm good? Okay. 5 minutes? Okay, cool. One of the things that I'd like to point out is, and I should have pointed this out in the first place, and I usually do, I'm not anybody, okay? I'm just a drunk that somehow or another lucked out and got sober. And I've been sober long enough now to tell you that it can happen to you. What do you have to do? Don't drink. Go to meetings. Okay? Some of you didn't get that. What is that? Is it, don't drink and go to meetings. And of course, you got to do other things too, like work in steps, you know? 1, 2, and 3 in the steps mean to me that I can't, God can, and I think I'll let it. The admitting steps at 4, 5, 6. 7, 8, 9 are the ball steps. Excuse me, girls. It separates the men from the boys and the girls from the women. It separates all of us from our childish and baby ways, if you will. 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance steps, which I try to stick with every day. I was coming over here, and you know how sometimes people will want to pass you, and they'll lag really far behind, and then they'll gun it, they'll come up right up to your butt end, you know? And this dude did it on the way in 198, you know? And I turned to her, and I said, look at this turkey, you know? And she says, now where's your anger? And I said, who cares about anger? He almost went up to my tailpipe, for crying out loud. She said, that was him. He didn't have to do that. And I went, good idea. I slowed down. Now I become the guy that I've always been angry at because I go so damn slow, see? So I'll fix his butt, see? Life happens. Things don't change. We change. I suppose you want to know what it is that was told to me that I heard so many times. Very simple. If you want others to change, you change. If you want others to change, you change. I am absolutely amazed at the fact that when I started changing and when I started looking in the mirror, when I started loving myself, I realized how much I love everybody else. And I realized that what I have to do is what I'm doing tonight. I have to be here, be present, be on time, be responsible, and let you all know that I love you. Thank you very much for having me. Oh, here's, I was trying to avoid this now. Well, what does the first step mean? I can't. The second step means God can. Okay, you're working on your second step, which means that you know that God can. The third step means you think you'll let him. See? And where that's coming from is you think you'll let him. It gives you that feeling that there is a higher power in your life and you want to let him in. Got it? Right on.